This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This program contains themes of an adult nature. Word for Word is an in-depth look into the lives of real people, which means this episode may contain explicit accounts of real-life events, including alcohol and drug use. The language used at times may cause some offence, but has been left uncensored due to the accuracy of the story. No offence is intended, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community stations around the nation, this is Word for Word. Coming to you from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy.
Welcome, family and friends, fans and fiends, to today's edition of Word for Word. I want to thank you for tuning in today. My name's Benjamin Norris, and it's simply a delight to continue to work on this show for the Joy Network, which has already featured some of the community's strongest voices. In the tradition of this ongoing program, I continue to look at powerful stories and insights into the life and lifestyle of some incredible people. Each week, we will chat with those in and around our community who have inspired us, entertained us, but mostly they've made an impact on the queer community of Australia. Today's guest is one of them. This man was born in Sydney, and while you've probably been watching him on the couch for years, there's more to this man than meets the eye. He is a Logie winner, reality TV star, and he is a featured personality on one of Australia's highest rating shows, Gogglebox, which is a huge hit for Foxtel and Network 10. And while his gregarious nature has made an impact on Australian television, he is simply unaware of the positive role model he and his partner Wayne have become by continuing to paint a positive picture of two men in a same-sex relationship. He has the gift of the gab, and if he isn't sipping a cocktail, he's probably giving you the tea on Joy 94.9's breakfast show, Tom and Warren. I'd like to welcome you, and I'd like to welcome Tom from Gogglebox, Tom Walsh, to Word for Word.
I was a single parent in my early 20s. So I had to learn. God, I had to be learned to be tough. Was I attracted to men very early in my life? Yes.
Well, Gogglebox premieres 7:30 tonight on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel and then continues 8:30 Thursdays on 10. Would you please thank Wayne and Tom?
Has being on Gogglebox changed how you watch TV when you're not on Gogglebox? You end up having far more discussions or arguments than you used to.
Well, I have realised how mean I am to Wayne.
Together for 15 years, this is Wayne and Tom.
Tom and Warren on Joy.
They say it's waking you up. I thought we were wanking you up.
The TV show about people watching TV may have seemed a little strange at first, but it's been nothing but a hit across the country.
Congratulations to Network 10's Logie Award winners.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I have been Gogglebox-ing for the last 24 hours. So since I found out that you were doing this, I was like, I'm just non-stop watching it. So I'm a little bit obsessed with you.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. You know what? I'm really shocked, honoured, and I can't believe I'm here. I'm a nobody. I mean, you have famous people. I mean, I've heard bloody Boy George on this. You know, you talk to some fans and you're thinking, you're talking to me? I don't even think I make the D-grade list of celebrities, isn't it?
Oh, come on. You don't need to be a celebrity. You just need to be interesting.
I'm a very open book. Sometimes my children panic when we get to go. So it's really funny. So my personality, let's explain it. My daughter's new boyfriend, she introduced me to him, lovely. She says, this is my dad. Like 95% of what he said is bullshit.
Okay,
he's just trying to get a reaction out of you. And for some reason, that is my personality. I do not believe half the crap that comes out of my mouth. Yeah, I can't help myself. It's terrible.
In my mind, what I think that you do really well is you say exactly what everyone else is thinking.
See, I'd be shocked because I think, oh, God, I hope the rest of the world doesn't think like me because we've been for one hell of a ride, let me tell you.
But I think, you know, there's a lot of what we do in our lives is that we watch things and we think to ourselves, oh, God, I'm not happy with that. Where with you, anything you see, you'll say it.
That gets me into trouble a lot.
Yeah.
But it also has been very good for me. So, look, let's go back. I was a single parent
you know,
in my early 20s, and then I took my children to Port Macquarie. Mm-hmm. I believed I had to get them out of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Problems with my mum and dad, who my dad would have basically said to me, maybe if you weren't a poof, she wouldn't be out looking for other men.
Okay.
So
fair enough, Dad.
There was no perception. So I took my kids to the bush. So I had to learn, especially going into a homophobia era, we're talking early 90s. Mm. God, I had to be learned to be tough. So every time I'd walk into a school, a shopping centre, I'd have to take a breath, breathe and think, you know what, I need to present? What am I going to present to the world for my children to know that we're not hiding in the streets, because everyone in the streets going, oh, there's the poof with his children. And even to the point that I could notice that kids wouldn't ask my children out to parties and things like that. So we're talking small little country school, 30 kids. My children were getting left out a lot. Now, people had the intention that, hey, you're a gay guy with three children, either you're going to be a child molester or you don't feed your children. Like, I've had people come to my house and go, wow, your children are very clean and very nice and very... And I don't know what they thought.
I reckon we're going to need to get into this a little bit more, but as far as I'm aware, they're loved in a different way.
Very much.
In and a better way.
I 100% agree. Because, you know, look, luckily, us being on Gogglebox, we were approached to do it. Mm. Didn't apply, so I've never wanted to be on TV. Woke up the next day and said, oh, I don't want to be on TV. That's not me. I'm happy to just be drunk, sit with my friends. I don't have to censor myself, you know. and you sit there on your TV. I did hear through the grapevine, week two of Gogglebox, the producer went to the head of Foxtel and said, I don't think he's right for the show.
Who told you that?
Well, I've been told by one of the drunk bosses at a dinner one day.
Okay.
But it was because it took the producer lady a little bit to understand my sense of humour. I think she just thought I'm taking the piss out of everything all the time rather than getting into it.
Yeah.
But what I've had to learn, and I think a lot of people are understanding, it is my defence mechanism. You know, I'm older. I live through horribleness. You know, your dad introduced you as a girl. You didn't want to be gay. You tried everything not to be gay. And so I think I've learnt to say what I want to say with no fear. And I think that scared Gogglebox a little bit, because...
But that's real life. I mean, that's where your magic is. When people I know, and like, when I think of Gogglebox, I think of you guys. Like, that's what sticks out for me. I think of Anastasia as well, and I think of those boys, and I don't even know their names. Like, that's how I think of Gogglebox. I'm like, there's Wayne and Tom, there's Anastasia, and then there's those two boys.
See, isn't it funny? See, I go straight to M. Sibley.
Like, they don't know my register. They don't know my radar. But that's the magic of that show, is that there's different personality types in that program that resonates to people, where for you, you resonate with me because I think we have a fair amount in common, you know, being queer men. You know, like, I think that immediately is the reason why I relate to you. Whereas other people who will relate to Anastasia for whatever reason, maybe they're Greek.
True. That's true.
But I think that they're covering all bases. Look, we're going to get into more of this. Now, you were born in Victoria, right?
No.
Where were you born?
Sydney.
So you were born in Sydney, in the big city?
Born in the big city. Went to school at Newtown, Christian Brothers, Burwood, 12. I left school in year 10 at 15. So many years of a Catholic education.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what were you like as a kid?
Terrible. Exactly what I am now. Look, my parents did the best that they could. My mum and dad had me at 15. Okay. So I was technically born above a stable. My mum was 14 and something when she had me. So legally, my grandparents had to adopt me, give permission, and then my parents lived there. Then they were allowed to re-adopt me when they hit a certain age in life.
So how old was your father at this point?
Same, 15.
So what's your relationship like then with your parents?
So it's really funny. So I can remember being 15, buying my mother a walking stick when she turned 30, thinking she was so old, you know?
Yeah.
So then I...
What do you think of that story now, Tom, now that you're 50?
And she was 45, and then she's handing me back the same walking stick, and you kind of then realise. But well, look, my parents struggled. They were young, and they wanted to party. My dad used to coach Western Suburbs, which is now Balmain Tigers, so he used to coach the football. He's still a Sydney racing, so he's very sporty.
Yeah, right.
So I was forced to play sport.
Were you good at football?
Oh, God, no. I think I spent the whole time looking for four-leaf clovers, and as the guy would run at me, I would just go, sidestep and move away. And that used to embarrass my dad horrendously. Yeah.
His firstborn is you.
Considering he was a footballer, he's coached football, he still works in the racing, he's very sporty.
Yeah.
And all I wanted to do was dance. So I sneaked in and I went to a dancing school, and at 7, my dad made me leave. I wasn't allowed to do it, and... But look, I have no animosity against my parents because they were young.
And it's a different time.
It was a very different time.
Yeah.
You know, and as far as he's concerned, so we've learnt to accept it. So my mother likes to explain to me, when I was 15, I said to her, maybe if you were more like me, you'd be a better person. And I left home that week.
So you were 15. Mm-hmm. So you're 15 years of age and you've moved out of home. Where do you go at 15?
Mm, See, this is a story. It worries me being a 15, because as a 15-year-old in Sydney going to King's Cross, I was mentally unstable, so I was an easy target for older men. Found that drugs might have at that stage in my life been an escape.
Yeah.
So it was very easy for older men to manipulate a 15-year-old as an adult. As a 15-year-old, I thought I exactly knew what I was doing. I knew I was in there for drugs and sex, and this guy could have taken care of me. It was going to be somewhere I could sleep that night. So this is why I've learnt to be very, very quick and very sharp-witted.
Mm.
I've been given a superpower that I can find someone's weakness in about 2.5 seconds.
What's my weakness?
I would say, looking at you, yours would be irrelevant. The thought of you being irrelevant would just, that would be, you're the one that would eat you up.
Okay, look, you've won. What do you win? I'll give you a steak dinner.
But it's really terrible. It was I think that's being a child, being in danger. You know, my parents were really young, and I'm not saying they did anything wrong, but they were out drinking, they were out playing football. You know, they're 15, I'm running around doing what I want. There's weirdos there.
How long are you doing this, though? Like, so you're 15 years of age and you're on the streets and you're getting yourself involved in sex and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Terrifying for any parent. How long were you doing
that? My parents had no idea. They didn't care. All of a sudden, my dad got, when I was 15, he decided that he was going to, my dad found God. That was right.
What's the relationship like then with your parents now?
I have a lot of anger towards them, but my parents, I love my parents.
Yeah.
And my dad has totally changed. My dad has become a totally different person, went from the aggressive, hit you, belittle you, to actually now wants to actually tell me he loves me. And as a 40-year-old adult, to hear that your dad loves you for the first time, it has a very big emotional impact on you.
How did you feel when he finally said that to you?
Angry.
Were you angry that it took this long and for you to achieve this much before he would recognize how amazing you are as a person?
I think that's might have been. But do you know what? It gone back. So, strangely thing is, I thought, I've just hit 50, and I thought I was strong, tough. I mean, I brought up 3 children. You know, I took my kids to the country. I bought 25 acres with no house. And we, in our combi, we chopped our way into our block of land each day. And we got further and further in. Me and the kids built our own house. We had no electricity. I used to milk a cow.
You're a survivor.
But I loved it because at 24, it was the safest and happiest time I ever felt in my life. I didn't owe anybody money. I had my 3 children with me. I owned the block of land. We might have been sleeping in a tent in a caravan.
Yeah.
But I was building my house. It was very exciting.
What about your siblings? How many siblings do you have?
I have 1 sister.
And what's your relationship like with her?
Yeah, we don't talk.
You don't talk to her at all?
Mm.
What was the last communication you had with her?
Probably 9 years ago when she was at my house and told me that she basically didn't like me and my husband because we were poofs, and I just said, well, yeah, you might have disliked me, but you didn't mind me minding your children for 9 years.
What's the age difference between you and her?
So I think she's about 8 years younger than me.
And so was there a dynamic that you played in the family as you were growing up?
The silent one.
So you were quiet?
I wouldn't say I was quiet. I was absent. So I wasn't involved. But then, okay, say I had a bad, you know, not a bad, I had a struggle as a childhood, but I'm going to say I had the best grandmother, my mother's mother, which always, that's where I get angry with my parents. Now, my parents at 14 got knocked up, and they found out very different time. My grandparents walked in with my parents and sat them down and said, here are your 3 options. You can adopt, I can get you an abortion, which in those days was illegal, but my grandfather had found a special doctor, or you can get married. You've got 48 hours to make the choice, and walked away. But it was funny that when my life turned that way, my parents didn't give me the choice. But my grandparents came to my defense.
It seems like you were lucky to have these grandparents in your life.
Really lucky. They've passed away now. They were very angry. You know how good my nana was? As a single parent living in Port Macquarie, no electricity. She'd pay for me once a month to come to the city. She would mind my children, and she goes, all right, now go off and have fun. Knowing that I was going out to get laid for the next 2 days.
But she wanted you to go and enjoy your life.
One day she came up and said, now I've been listening to that talk back, and they said, there's commie dommies, you know, the AIDS. And she goes, no, I saw a packet in the chemist. Would you like me to buy some? Here's my 80-something-year-old grandmother. And I'm going, no, no, you and I will not be discussing my sex life. It is all okay now. Yes, and I can buy my own condoms. Thank you very much.
I love that your 80-year-old grandmother is listening to Talkback. She's aware of HIV. She's aware of AIDS. And yeah, she's buying
called it
you
the AIDS. In the those AIDS. Days, it was a the AIDS.
Yeah. And the commie dummies. You've got to go and going into Sydney, doll?
Yeah, she goes, I saw him in the chemist. I asked the man, it's like commie dummies, you know? I'll just get you a packet.
I think it's a difficult time. So what year are you born?
That's rude. 1968.
Well, we know it's your 50th birthday because we read about it in the magazines.
Oh, that's right.
We read it in New Weekly. Like, it's not a shock to know that you've just turned 50. Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you. It was very hard, let me tell you that.
Why?
Because I don't want to be 50.
But you don't come across as a... Okay, do you feel 50?
No.
Okay, well, that's fine.
We went shopping the other week and I had my girls with me and I went into the shop and I thought, oh, my God, I love those leopard pants. So I put them on and I've come out thinking, you know, I'm 50 and I look at these leopard. Walked out. My children and my hubby have started barring. They're going, bah, from the front of the shop. I go, what? They go, mutton dressed as lamb. So I took off the pants. I threw them at the counter. I stormed out of the place, ignored them, then got home and thought, well, you bastards, I look great in them. I'm going back to buy them.
Did you get them?
So I went back and bought them. Every time I put them on, all I can hear are my children going, bah, bah. Yeah.
The next time I see you in here at Joy, I want to see you walking around with those leopard pants on. Well, you've got the leopard top that you wear on Gogglebox.
And I got leopard shoes, I got a leopard jacket, you're right, but the leopard pants might have been a bit much.
So what school did you go to?
Christian Brothers Burwood.
Okay, so I went to a Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and how did that go? What was it like going to school every day?
I never went half the time.
Was that because the kids were kind of mean to you because you were different?
Oh, no. Look, they might have been mean, but I can tell you what, I've never been a wallflower.
Okay.
Yeah, which is strange, and you know, no one other than my ex-wife has ever punched me.
Really?
Yeah, and I've been in straight bars with men that are 6'4", and I'm telling you, within 3.5 minutes, I can have you in the floor. Like I said, I know someone's weakness. I'm going to go straight for it, if I have to protect myself.
I love that about you. I mean, it's a survival tactic. I think you've just worked out how to do that.
Yeah.
So, you get through school. Did you have any idea of what it is that you wanted to do for a living at this point?
You know, isn't it funny? If you asked me if I wanted to be, I would have wanted to be a dancer. If that's all the things in the world I will regret, is I think I could have been a ballet dancer. Yeah.
I see you as like a backup dancer.
Oh, that would be my dream. Kylie Minogue's backup dancer. I hope you're listening, sweetheart.
She'll be out there. You know, I read also that, you know, the Minogues, they love Gogglebox. They're obsessed with it.
Well, it's strange. We were at a theatre the other day. Next minute, Danny comes up. Oh, my God. Catches us, takes, you know, cuddles. But the strangest thing was, we're sitting here with Danny Minogue because we forget who we are, me and Wayne. Because, I mean, as you know, we sit on a couch. It's remote control cameras. I'm not famous. But I realise now we are a public persona.
Yeah,
is that the word you want to use?
Well, you're a TV personality.
Yeah.
And also, not just a TV personality, your show is one of the highest rating shows in the country. Seriously. Could you pinch yourself and be like, how did this happen?
But you know what? I don't take any responsibility for that.
That's the magic of you, though. I think that is the reason why people are drawn to you, is that there's no element of you feeling that any of this is deserved. Mm. And I think you're continuously surprised that it's happening.
100% surprised. Look, as I was saying, like, to have Danny Minogue come running up going, oh, my God, I love you. And then she goes to me, do you know my sister?
Yeah.
And I looked at her and go, duh, Kylie.
Yeah. I got tattoos of her on my body.
Then I realised I dirt Kylie.
Yeah.
Said, has sent in emails across the world of clips of Gogglebox of what we're saying about the Minogues on there. It's crazy.
So growing up, what about, when was the first time you were aware that there was same-sex relationships?
See, that's going to be a hard one to answer.
Mm.
Was I attracted to men very early in my life? Yes. But is that I felt a lot of guilt for a lot of years, thinking because I knew that I was putting myself in these situations. I wanted the physical attraction. I wanted to be touched. But in an adult now, I can realize that how these adults manipulated children, it's child molestation. It's what it comes down to.
What age are you talking?
Anywhere between 11 up to about 16.
Where were you in those environments?
Well, you learn where they go. So my dad was in races. So I think there must be this internal beacon that you know where you're going to get attention from, who's going to be safe, where you can go and get physical attention. So at the stables at my dad, you know, was full of apprentice jockeys or older trainers. You just seem to be able to pick out the one that you know is going to
give you that sort of
attention. To give you the attention that you're looking for.
What is it like now being a father, thinking back to those moments? Like, is it terrifying to think that you could get yourself into those situations? Has it given you a perspective?
It's, I have no regrets in my life, and that's one thing I'll never do, because I think everything that I've done has taught me a lesson. So I'll never look back and go, I regret doing that. Do I regret? No, I don't. I don't regret it. But it taught me a good lesson about how to talk to my children, to make sure that no other person could manipulate them.
In that way.
In that way. Not just that way. It's anyways. We live in a manipulating society. We manipulate our children continuously.
Was there an age where you came out, like, that you realised, do you know what, I'm gay and I'm telling people?
I was living in two different lives, 100% two different lives. So I was living in Oxford Street, misbehaving, definitely gay. I mean, the gay of the village. I mean, Oxford Street was very small in those days. We all knew everybody.
Yeah.
But then I also was going home on weekends, say, or at times, to visit school friends and then living a totally different life.
And were you straight in that life?
No, I still wasn't kissing girls.
Right.
Yeah.
So when was the first time you had a relationship then with a woman?
Well, it was actually my ex-wife.
And how old were you when you came across her?
Well, I've known her for my whole life. So she was my best friend's little sister. So basically, long story short, she was having problems in her life. She'd come from a terrible home life. On the outskirts, they were the perfect Christian family, Catholic. You know, he would read the book, she collects the tray. You know, they were all perfect, perfect. Behind the scenes, there were some issues in that family. And unfortunately, she needed to get out. And she'd known me for a long time. And look, at that stage, I was living in Oxford Street. I was going to the Open and Nickin Cellars. I was in, I might have been 16, but I was still in the know with people. I was getting out and about. I was hanging around with DiLorenzo. You know, like on Point Piper. I was hanging around with the IT group. So I think it was easy for her to see as an escape.
Yeah.
We had sex once. Stupidly on drugs, and I think I wanted to have sex with a girl to think that maybe if I have sex with a girl that I won't be gay anymore and I can go back and live in the suburbs and get a life and have family and have friends. And I think we've all done that, and unfortunately we had sex once and she got pregnant.
The first time?
Yeah.
And then because of, I guess, the way your parents were and your grandparents were like, did you feel pressure then to be like, well, now we get married?
No, I didn't. I honestly thought I was going to be honest and say, you know, look, I did say that, you know, they all knew. There was so many rumours going around, there was no way it was going to go. But to be honest, basically, her, my dad, her mother and the Catholic priest all arrived at my house. I was dragged out of the house and 6 weeks later I was married. And I had to tell my boyfriend that I had got someone knocked up.
And how long had you been dating him for?
Not long. But isn't it funny? I love Wayne, don't get me wrong, and I'm not going to, I would never trade Wayne in.
Here we go.
But isn't that one of those things that he's always been that one love of my life that I wish I would have searched out years later? But I think I was embarrassed about how it all ended, that I wouldn't have went near there.
Have you ever spoken to him again?
No.
There's two things there. Dangerous, I get it, because, like, you don't want to go down that path because there was obviously feelings. But you also sometimes need to put that storyline to bed. You might be carrying that guilt around for no reason.
No, look, there was a bit more guilt because he turned up on the day I got married to tell me that he really loved me and don't marry her, and my family basically told him to get out or they'd break his neck. And
Tom, has your life always been like this? Like,
so people come out at the end of the wedding. I was like turning 20 and they said it was so romantic. You cried the whole way through it. And I'm thinking, well, I wasn't crying because the woman in the white dress walking down the aisle. I was crying because I would have rather,
to have married the man.
Hmm.
So you end up being married for how long?
Well, we had three children.
Very quickly.
Pretty much after each other. So look, it was really strange. We got married and we moved into a house together. And I can remember the next 3 months of us just laying in bed like statues. Like, we were married in our own little unit in the city. And we'd go to bed and we just would lay there. I didn't know what to do. She wasn't going to make the move. And we just sat there. That was our relationship. And so, I remember laying there thinking, is this for life?
Is this a prison sentence?
Yeah.
So were you not playing around then?
No.
So you're the perfect husband?
No. well, how can I be a perfect husband if I'm not satisfying my wife, or
okay.
if I'm not emotionally attached to this marriage, or I'm not... Look, I have a lot of guilt, and I know my ex-wife has a lot of anger towards me, and I think it's all justified, 100%. I still believe she went in with her eyes wide open. She knew what was happening, but I still believe that, I take a lot of guilt involved on how I affected her life and the effects that I've had on her.
I love your ownership on this, because I think it's, it's very... There'd be a lot of people that would get caught up in the anger and push the whole thing aside and play the blame. Oh, well, you came in with your eyes open, you knew. Where for you, you are taking responsibility.
And I think that's the only reason my children are quite normal. Because, do you know what? Someone said to me very early when Christina had gone, whatever you say bad about your ex-partner in front of your children, remember that's 50% of them. So they will hear that. And for some reason, as a young one, that really clicked on me. So I will never... So even when their mother would get... We've had her and her dad try to run us off the roads in streets, like run us into ditches. I actually thought it was the time me and my children might have been dead, because her brother, I thought he was going to get out with a gun and kill us, and honestly pushed us into... I thought we were gone. But I never have blamed her. Isn't that funny? She's taken me. I've had AVOs put against me. Once she come home with these guys, I'm at home with two babies in there, have no idea. Woke up, found some guy in my daughter's bedroom leaning over her bed. I've gone ballistic, run out there. She's brought men back from the pub. I've said, get out of my house. She called the police. The police come and take me away. Because in those days, if a girl told the police that he pushed me, I was the one taken away, and she had witnesses.
So when do you realise that that situation is not right?
I never left her.
So she left you?
She left, and I deliberately got her out of the house. I got her to threaten me in front of people. I knew she was cheating with this other guy.
Yeah.
I invited them all over for Christmas, and the local had a party. Deliberately left her and him alone for a minute. Got them to start doing something, then deliberately got people to come into the room with me, and then went, oh my God, look what's happening. So those two physically attacked me in front of witnesses. I got to change all the locks on the door and say thank you very much.
And you kept the kids?
Mm-hmm. I was given custody of the children.
Oh my God. How old are all the kids at this point?
Under five.
Okay. And so they're all under... You've got three kids under five, and she's then left with this man?
Yep.
So how do you then try...
Moved three doors across the road from us. My children used to cry, and she'd be over there with his kids and down
What's
the street.
Their relationship like then with her?
My oldest daughter has struggles to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
My youngest daughter and her have... They have times they get along. She can manipulate my son very easily.
How do you then create a normal life coming out of that? Like, what's the time difference between that and then you meeting Wayne?
Wow, a couple of years. Wayne was a bit of a fluke. So, look, in those days, it was totally different. I knew that I was going out once a month to get to have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
But I honestly 100% felt in my heart that I'll never have a relationship. It's not... And look, remember, I saw a lot of single mothers, and I thought they bought men too quickly in and out of their children's lives. So the men come in, they move in, the children make a relationship, they get out. So I swore that would never happen. And Wayne came along, went out. Wayne was a very new boy in town, and, so it's a new blood. So we were straight in there. I think I went up and told him I was the prettiest thing in the room, so he'll be going home with me tonight.
She's a confident girl.
I don't know why, because I really don't feel like that, but that's just how I speak, went off.
Yeah.
Yeah, we spent the night, we danced, he was very attractive. I said to him, well, want to come back to my house? He goes, oh, I don't do that on the first night. And I thought,
what,
you've just wasted my whole day. So I gave him a fake phone number and left.
I'm here for the sex.
That's what I tried to explain to you. Like, he's going, yeah. And then
How long does it... So you give him a fake phone number, which obviously he calls and realizes you're not there. Yeah. So then how do you get from a fake phone number to 17 years of a relationship?
I think it was 4 days later. He must have been calls, and I'm trying to run the children away from him, trying to keep away from him. And then he said hello, and then there was something else happened and ran into him. And then I must have just admitted, and I go, yeah, look, here's my real number. And
I'm obsessed with you. You should have slept with me on the first day.
Yeah.
Don't waste my time.
I don't know how we ever got a second date. That was okay.
I think it's interesting about this relationship with you because, you know, for a lot of queer people, there's a lot of stereotypes about queer people not having long relationships. What's the success to the two of you being able to make this work for so long? Because I've been out with you and had a beer with you and I've witnessed it and I can see that there's a genuine connect, there's a genuine affection between the two of you.
Do you know what? People ask that all the time and I think the best thing I can say is I actually still like him.
Yeah.
Because you can love anybody. Mm. Look, we all fall out of love. Don't get me wrong. Some days I want to kick the prick in the head. Yeah. You know?
But I'm in a nine-year relationship. We're up to 9 years, and so I know what that's like. I mean, I know what it's like to be in love and also, you know, want to kill them at the same time.
But then even though I might not love you at this exact moment, I still like you. Mm. Because how do you not like somebody who's been there 100%? This man has been through court battles with me. So when the first time I moved Wayne into my house, my ex-wife and her mother decided that took my son out of school without my permission, which in those days, no one could question, well, why? What's the problem? And asked my son, had I touched his private bits? And he explained that I had, but without asking the correct questions about teaching your son how to pull back his foreskin, which is what a good dad should do to all their sons, you know, teach them how to be clean. And we went to court. And I remember the day Coffs Harbour Court we got sent to, and I'm thinking country court. Me and Wayne have been dating now 5 years. He's lived with the kids about three. To think that I've put him through all of that. He's been put through courts and questioned into private rooms about how not many men would do that.
I don't know how. Is there any way of ever forgiving these people for doing that to you?
Yeah, I have no animosity. You can't, I understand a lot of people, you know, there's some things, you know, my life has been easy, you know, people have had horrible things done to them and you hear them say, I forgive my rapist, I forgive the murderer of my son. And, you know, and people go, how do you do that? And you've got to explain, it's not about forgiving them so they can run over you again. You can't move on in your life if you're still holding aggression and anger towards somebody who did something to you. Now, we know as adults, we don't know where they're coming from. Mm. I've taken a perception as you're coming at me this angle. How do we know how they're coming?
It's survival, though. I mean, that's the one thing that we keep coming back to again and again from having these conversations about your life, is that it is a very strong survival tactic to be able to put things to bed and move forward.
Correct.
Because you can't welcome new chapters into your life if you're still focusing on something else.
Well, when you're living in a tent and it's raining and you've got to get three children to bed and you've now got to go and light a fire to try and get a shower together for your children and cook porridge and get their lunch made and get them down a dirt road onto a bus, I wake up mornings, I was in tears. I remember waking up thinking, why did God not just kill me last night? I remember thinking, if I just died in my sleep, then I don't have to feel guilty about abandoning my children, you know.
What's your relationship like with the kids now?
Oh, fantastic.
Do they come to Melbourne a lot?
Well, my son still hasn't left home.
Okay.
So he's 26. So he just had his 26th birthday. 26, 27, I believe, in a couple of days. And I said to him last year, what would you like for your birthday? And he goes, oh, I need a fairing for my bike. I go, no, mate, you got me wrong. Do you want Bond? Do you need a lounge? Do you want a kettle? Get the hell out of my house, you know. He just tells me to shut up and move on. But it's funny, girls are very independent. Boom, 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 out and gone.
They were gone, what, 19, 20, around that age?
Went off to uni.
Yeah.
Straight off to uni. Off they go. My son's a boy. If I didn't talk to him for a week, he wouldn't question. So, you know, he walk in, I go, hey, I haven't seen you for a week. So?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, so, you know. But isn't it funny with my daughters, if I haven't rang them today, they would ring me first thing. Is everything okay? Why haven't you called? So we actually talk every day.
Every day.
Every day.
I love that you have this relationship with them. I wish that more kids had this sort of a relationship with their parents.
I'm so proud of my children. I really am, out of all the things in the world. And I remember, and it wasn't about, I have a doctor who's a daughter. I have one that does that. But it's not about that. I remember saying to them, I don't care if you want to be a garbage collector. I don't care if, like, what you want to do in life. I just want you to be happy, honest to yourself. And that's all that matters. I think that's all you've got to do, isn't it?
What makes a good father?
What makes a good father? Well, I think definitely it's just being around. Yeah. Look, some of the best parenting advice I like to give people, Children are shitheads, let me tell you. But it's all about language. And I don't know what it was that hit me very young about learning to that. Never say to your child, you're naughty. Because what do the kids hear? I'm naughty. You say to them, that behavior is unacceptable. So they hear, I'm not naughty, but it's the behavior that is unacceptable. So language is very, very important, and especially for men in this society, because it's men on TV as our prime minister. It's men that are running companies. It's men that are running churches. You know, man, everywhere we go, people are seeing men running the place. So I think it's important for dads to actually make sure you talk honestly and be there, be present.
Where, I don't know how your first book was about cocktails, when in actual fact the first book should have been about raising children.
Look, me and Wayne were asked years ago to write a book. I didn't, because it is not my story, it's my children's story. Now they're adults and we've talked about it and they know a lot more. I mean, my kids at stages went, how come I never knew you were being taken to court, me to be taken away from you? I go, because you weren't meant to know. You were nine. Your job was to get up, feed the chickens, get to school, have your dance bag ready and get to dancing. Your job wasn't to figure out that I had to spend the next 6 hours in court trying to save you. That wasn't your responsibility. I actually would feel really angry at a parent that puts that on their children.
Mm.
They don't need to know they're going to be abandoned by another parent or somebody else is going to get away.
That is absolute protection. You know, if you're looking back and you could give yourself advice, let's say Tom walks into the room now as a 12-year-old, what advice would you give Tom?
Really? Attend more orgies. I mean, no.
I never know what you're going to say.
But I'm serious. I say to you all the time. I think about the time back when I was young and I never went to one. I look back at that, a fond memory. And I thought, look, when you're young, because you know when you're young, you look at yourself and you think, okay, oh, I'm skinny, I'm unattractive, I'm there. You hit 50, you look at photos of when you're 17, you think, shit, I never looked so good. I would have attended more orgies. I wouldn't have been so uptight about sex. We're all so hung up about it.
Okay.
But isn't it funny? I'm very open with my sex, but, oh, my children, oh, my God. There was no way there was any of them. They were going to be virgins until the day.
What's Wayne like then with, what's he like with talking about sex?
Well, he's really good. He is, so let's just say we sent our, Jade was 20. She just done 2 years of medicine and we sent her overseas for her birthday. You know, 12 months, get over Europe, you know, you're not going to have a party, do that. So I spent the whole time going, now don't get holiday ahead and don't get laid and don't get knocked up and everyone's going to be a liar and that man will be trying to give you drugs in his drink and rah, rah, rah. Then I walk away and then Wayne walks up and says, now here's the condoms, have a lot of fun. You know what I mean? Be safe. Yeah. So he is the...
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
So what is it that you do for a living throughout all of this? I mean, obviously, you know, now we know you are being on Gogglebox and you're a radio presenter, but, you know, there's an enormous amount of time that you're making a living and feeding these kids. Like, what were you doing?
I have done it all.
Okay.
All of it.
Give me your top three jobs.
Okay. So, well, I'm trained as a hairdresser.
Okay.
So that's what it's done.
That's why Wayne always looks like he's got a good haircut.
Oh, yeah. I let someone cut it the other day because I was running late and I thought, oh, that looks crazy. Yeah. But isn't it funny? I don't care about my hair. Look at me. I'm the least caring about how I look half the time.
It's a look, though.
Yeah, it's a filthy lesbian Bieber look, isn't it? That's what I feel like I'm channeling the lesbian
Bieber. Like, I'm not saying anything. Okay, so you've been a hairdresser.
Yep.
What else have you done for work?
I've been a teacher's aide. Which was a good job when the kids were at school.
Mm.
So I used to get the uncontrollable children. Actually had to meet them at the front gate and check them for knives before they're allowed on the school property. So I don't know how. I think after about 4 years, I remember quitting that job thinking, God, I hate children. Because I just spent all day at home with children. Then you go to work with naughty kids.
Yeah.
I think it was hard on my kids because my kids would get home and they'd whine about something. They'd go, you don't know how easy your life is. You know, there's boys in, you know, you tell them stories and they go, oh. So I've cleaned a hospital. I've cleaned toilets. I have
You've done
worked
it all.
In a call centre. So I did that for a little while. That was probably my last job I had.
So that was the last job that you... So how do you get picked to be on Gogglebox?
Wow. So we're on a Joy excursion. How many years now? 5 years ago.
Okay.
So Joy had got part of this old train called Ride to Pride, and they took a train, an old-fashioned steam train from here to Shepparton.
Yeah, right.
And I'd sent it on the Joy newsletter, and Wayne's favourite auntie lives in Shepparton. And we thought, oh, that'd be fun, a weekend away on the train, and we'll go along. And so we stayed in a 1940s little cabin. Everyone had all their own little train, and you had your little compartment. One whole compartment had all its seats taken out, and Joy had a disco set up in the middle of it. How great. Every station we arrive, you're dancing on the way in.
Fabulous.
So we did that and spent the time there. So I was sitting in a park in Shepparton, taking the mickey out of all the drag queens trying to walk through cobblestone. You know, they're trying to...
It's a good look.
And they were... I mean, we're all involved. So we were just sitting there, and I'm sitting in the grass, commentating on everybody who walked by. Goggleboxing is basically what we were doing. This really hot young guy come up and goes, oh, can you mind if I sit with you guys? Oh, sit down, young man, you know.
Have a seat.
And then he goes, well, I'm actually a talent scout, and I've been watching you now for 2 days. Would you be interested to be on TV? And I've gone, sure, I'll do that. I've got no problems. I'll be on TV. Woke up the next day and he said, what did we agree to? That sounds stupid. Like, people watching TV... And they were meant to do a Skype interview that next night with London and maybe Sydney, I don't know. Mm. I didn't answer the call. Said to Wayne, don't answer it. I'm not going to be on TV. Sounds ridiculous. I don't want people to see me. I'm not thinking, look in the mirror, I go, this mug's not for TV. You know, like, this is not TV. This is not a TV face, let me tell you. And next minute, next day, six people arrived at our house with all these cards, and they kept... like flashing up bits of pictures and asked me to comment, and 2 weeks later we're on TV. My children panicked, because they're going, Dad, the world does not need to know what you say.
When what do they think of Dad being on Gogglebox?
They love it.
Yeah.
They do. Listen, let me tell you, yeah, straight boys get a lot of action when they tell their the young girls that they're my gay dad's on TV. Lucky he's got a lovely girlfriend now, and I won't say that because Jess might be listening because she's gorgeous.
Was she a fan of Gogglebox?
I think everybody is. It's really strange. I don't mean that, because you're in a shop and, you know, people look at you and smile, and you smile at them and they still smile, and you think, oh, I'm on TV. I'm sorry. Hello.
You kind of forget. Yeah. Has it been strange to give up a bit of anonymity in that way? Like, some days do you think, oh, God, I don't wish that I... What have I done to my life?
Daily I do. Me and Wayne would have left after season two, 100%, because we were both working full-time. You're racing home. You're doing it. It was starting to affect our lives, as in you can't just race down to Safeway at 7 o'clock in the morning to get milk because someone's going to want a selfie. Mm. So it's all going to be, how do I look? How am I going to present myself to the world? Mm. So I disliked it, and we were getting out. So we actually said, thank you, we've had a great time. It was some person we spoke to. Here we go. Young family walking down and had a little boy, girl who was not quite sure whether, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some day was a boy, some day was a girl. You know, that's no problem. And they said that this child who was 7 turning 8 had been totally depressed for years, had watched us on TV, and it started a conversation in their family. And this mum and dad, biggest bogans. Like, I'm not meaning that horrible, but if I walked to a pub and saw the dad there, I would sit on a different seat, because he'd be the type that I would think, oh, yeah. And he said, and he cuddled us and kissed us. He says, you've created a conversation in my family, and now I look at my child and smile every day. And they got to go to school and have a discussion. And we went, are we making an impact on TV? You know, we talked to a lot of Queensland, and everyone wanted to talk about our marriage equality. We've got children. And we thought, okay, maybe we do hang around another season, and, you know, marriage equality starting. And but then part of me wish we jumped out. We became the poster hate child during the Marriage Equality Act.
What happened to you during that time?
Filth. I've never read so much horrible stuff in our life. I mean, death threats through all the way through to... Which is strange, because we'd been on TV for 2 years before that.
And never received any of it.
See, as you know, you go on a reality show, the first thing the production comes, they send you off to a psycho who evaluates you and, you know, tells you, you know, do you understand you're going to be hammered? You're two gay guys going to be on TV. You know, let's be honest, you know, Wayne's overweight, you know, we're not the
perfect... They're going to pick you apart for whatever they want to say.
Yeah. Nothing but love. Occasionally we might have had someone say, oh, gross, did you rub his leg on TV? How disgusting. But it didn't get, but the moment the marriage equality survey was announced, boom, here we go.
Are you still angry with the government for organising that plebiscite, because for people like you, and I know this because I was in regional Queensland and I watched it up there, during the plebiscite, it was such a hard time because it gave people an excuse, really, to say some really nasty things during the No campaign.
What it made me realise is when we were talking before that I think I've brushed off all this shit from when I was younger. You know, you didn't bother me when you called me that name. Yeah. That teacher didn't bother me. My parents, this coacher. But all of a sudden the marriage equality come and all these people that had been horrible to me, I started realising, hang on, you do control my life still. You're going to have another say over... Well, I thought 20 years ago I've walked away from you, but that's what affected me. All the people I could see in my life that I thought I'd got over, all of a sudden I realised, hang on, maybe I'm not over this because you're now going to have a choice to dictate how I live.
It's interesting that you say this because I've been watching you for years on the television. You've been on television for 5 years. Like, you've been a part of the landscape of Australian television. And I think that for you, I remember watching something where you said, I'm so strong, I don't cry. And I remember it was when Wayne was talking to you about the fact that his mum, I think, had not seen him on Goggle. Oh, no, had not seen you both get married. And I'll never forget watching this clip because you were like, I'm so strong. Yeah. And you could see Wayne was really upset. And then the thing that killed me was then when we watched you watch the marriage equality on the telly while you were goggle boxing it and you broke down crying. I was a mess. Yeah. I was a mess. Because for me personally, watching you go through that, you could see it all rose to the surface.
I'm glad I cried because I think, you know, and I go through and I think I was a fantastic parent and I was very honest, but you're right, I never cried in front of my children. To me, that was always a weakness. How can I present the strong leader of my family if I'm weak in the corner in tears? So I cry in the toilet. So, like, when my dog passed away, I'm one of those that locked myself in a dark room in the toilet and I'll cry. Very, very rare for me to cry. But you're right that... So, the whole marriage thing... So, I'd just been here in the morning. We'd been... Oh, actually, we spoke to you. I'm sure we rang you up. Yeah, so we... So, I ran down to the marriage equality. Wayne had just started a brand new job, so he couldn't come that day. So, I'm with friends. But just as, you know, it was 2 minutes before they're about to make the announcement, you know, and all my mates are grabbing their partners and they're all cuddling... And I realised I was all by myself. And I actually went, we're going to lose this. For some reason, I was 100% convinced.
I thought the same thing, yeah.
And I just thought, oh, my God. And I thought, what's going to happen? And I started to cry. I could feel tears. This policeman pushed his way through the crowd. He had read an article about the death threats we were getting and the horrible things that were happening. He walked up to me and he goes, mate, my wife, my children and everyone, we're all here for you. Here's my name. Anyone threatens again, send them straight to me. He said, doesn't matter what today's survey comes out from, you have to remember that 80% of society love you. And I burst into tears. Here I am. And that's what we're watching on TV. Yeah, it was. Isn't it funny? You think you're strong. You think you're tough. Mm. You think you can push through all of that. Mm. And all of a sudden, something like that opens and you realise how much weight you had been carrying.
What's the most embarrassing thing that you've ever said on Gogglebox? Is there anything that you've ever wanted to take back?
Oh, God, no. Actually, I think we were quite lucky. I don't think they put anything on there that's really horrible. You know, I think I said last week on TV on that board that I even nearly rang my mother. I do know that upsets her when she hears that shit on TV. Yeah, and I really was that bored. I was getting that desperate. I thought, God, I'll leave.
What were you watching at that point?
Probably the football.
And what are the fans like? Because, I mean, different shows have different lots of fans, but the fans for this show are huge. What are they like to interact with? On a day-to-day basis?
It's everybody. It's every... Look, we've had Bill Shorten stop a car to get out and take a photo with us. Bill Shorten. I mean, like, he's... I'm just thinking... I go, mate, you don't even know who I am. And he goes, I'll admit, I don't get to watch a lot of TV, but he said, if I'm in Parliament, nothing's better than going home on a Thursday night at 9:30. I can turn off, I can have a laugh, but I actually find out what the real Australia's saying, not Bush.
Through you.
Through us. But then... The other day, you know, school kids at the show, you know, these kids are running, I love you. And I'm looking at her going, sweetheart, you're too young to be watching anything I say on TV. What the hell are you
doing? I'm not a role model for you.
Yeah, I'm just thinking and...
Who's your most famous fans? Like, give me your top three people that have hit you up and said that they love you that are famous.
Kylie Minogue.
Amazing.
Danny Minogue.
Amazing.
And there's nobody else that's famous in this world, is there?
Millie Minogue, maybe.
Oh, yeah, I love Millie.
Small amounts. Yeah. Small amounts of fame. Can you see yourself doing this for much longer?
No.
How long? What's the expiry date on this?
I think tonight I start filming episode 7. I think I have about 3 more left.
And that's all you'll do?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're out of contract.
If the dollar value is right, will Australia get to see you on Gogglebox for longer?
No.
And what's your reason for walking away from this?
Because I've had a lot of fun, and I think it's just time.
What do you want to do next?
Honestly, me and Wayne are ready to retire. We're ready to buy a farm and go bush. So, look, don't get us wrong. Look, we wrote a book. It had nothing to do. We wrote a book. They pushed it out. Someone goes, you're going to publicise it? Oh, I don't know. I couldn't be bothered. You know, to me, it was just one of these bucket lists. I'm going to be able to sit there with my grandchildren and show them that, hey, look, your dads are in a book. Yeah, we've been on TV. We have no expectations. I'm not here to become the next Joel Creasy or take over. You know what?
But you're not the next Joel Creasy, though. That's the thing. It's like, you're not, there's no mould for Tom. Tom from Gogglebox is a name.
Yeah, but I piss a lot of people off. I mean, you know that here in Joy. I get daily complaints. I'm
from
not
who?
An 80s shock jock. And
Who's complaining about you?
Listeners.
What do they say?
That I'm rude, I'm nasty, I'm derogative, I'm an 80s shock jock. You can't say that anymore. Yeah.
But you're just a real person, and that's what I think resonates. I mean,
I'm no different, am I?
No.
And I swear, look, that's anyone I've ever worked with over the, you know, 30 years, and they always say, that's the one question everyone says to me, is he like that at work? And they go, worse. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You are being edited, yeah.
And what about, though, if you get a phone call from one of the big metro commercial radio, if they offer you a job doing breakfast radio?
See, I'd like to say yes, because I like to talk, but I honestly don't think my personality would work, because I cannot help. My mind is too quick, and if somebody says something, I've got the reaction straight after. And sure, it works on Gogglebox. I can get away with it a little bit here on Joy, but I don't think commercial is going to be like me saying.
You know that it's working, though, when you're actually resonating with people, good and bad. And I remember Kate Lambrook once said to me, she's like, if you're successful in radio, it means that 60% hate you.
Oh, cool.
And 40% love you. And I was like, what? And I'm like, I always thought, no, to be successful, you need 100% of people to be on board with you. But no, if you look at Kyle Sandilands, if you look at the best people on radio, they resonate with people because that is their truth. They speak their mind, and people either love it or hate it, but they're still listening.
I think it's the one thing in society we've gone too far, and I do believe in political correctness, because there have been some horrible words used against us as well as other members of society, but we've gone too far. I mean, come on, if we can't make a joke about it.
So you think the political correctness has
gone way too far? I think it's time we can have a joke, and if we can't all have a joke, why are we even here? I mean, we may as well all just sit home and watch Netflix and never go out. Let's not interact with each other.
It's kind of the way that it's going, isn't it?
I hang around with friends, and sometimes we say some stuff and we think, if people heard us, we could be arrested. But there is no animosity. And you know what? I will pick on short people. I'll pick on overweight people. But I tell you what, if society came at you or the government, I'll be the first one up there with the banner to make sure that you were protected and felt safe in society. Just because I want to make a joke doesn't mean I don't respect you.
Maybe people don't know, though, that there's no malice. Like, I know you, and I know that, you know, you are a fearless survivor, you're a fighter, but you're an empath. Like, your empathy is the strongest thing. People listening on radio, people watching on television, they might not have the privilege of knowing that about you.
No, and that's true.
What have you learned from working here at Joy?
I think we've gone too separate. You know, we worked better as a community when we all came together and we fought for something. Now, we as a community, I know from a lot of gay men, because who I hang around with, we kind of, we've won. No, we haven't won. There are still trans people out there that have been bashed, murdered and taken down. Women still are not accepted in this country. You know, why can't people be bisexual? I mean, I call them greedy. Pick a side, you bastards. But see, that's my I'm saying that as a joke, but in my heart.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Thank God people can love who they want to love, and you should be able to love the person, not the sex. But I'm happy for anyone. So I think as a community, we've got to stop separating ourselves again into these little letters and acronyms and sit in our own corners. We need to come together again because we've got a big fight on our hands. We have ScoMo with his secret whispers. We don't know what's happening with his religious freedom. It is happening. We're about to go into election. He's already using political. We have our Liberal Party here in Victoria who have now been branched out by the Mormon Church. Now, they are 1% of our population and they have 40% of the voting power in Victorian Liberal. This scares the hell out of me.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. And it's not against religion. I believe that it is my job on Joy as well as on TV, and I might not be the most intelligent, highly educated or articulate person, but I know that I can use humour to point something out. And I think we should. I think we should be able to get conversations going.
Have you got a message for the queer community that might be listening to this right now?
Just love yourself and be strong. I think that's the most important.
I mean, it's an important lesson for people to be aware of.
But I think it's for everybody. I think we've got to get rid of... Do you think today's society we've got to get rid of that we are queer, they are straight? Let's just become human. I think we've gone beyond that. Let's just take the piss out of everybody.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an amazing episode of Word for Word. And I tell you what, when are we going to record the sequel? Because I feel like we've only just gotten started.
Giggle, we haven't touched the surface yet, have we?
Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Word for Word is presented and produced by Ben Norris from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy. Word for Word is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations across the community radio network.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.